Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Well, hey there, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Risen Motherhood. I'm Emily Jensen, and my co-host, Laura Wiffler, will be joining me in just a second for another episode in this whole series. But before we jump in, I wanted to let you know that Laura Wiffler has a children's book that is releasing on March 5th, 2024, called A World Wonder. That date is coming up really soon, which means there's only 1 week left to snag freebies for your kiddos when you pre-order. Laura wrote this book to encourage kids everywhere to dream big, but at the same time to show children that it's often the small, humble things they do that bring the most fulfillment and joy in life. We hope that if this storyline sounds like it's going to resonate with you, that you would go pre-order the book and go ahead and claim your free items that go with it. You have to click on a link in our show notes and actually put in kind of some information to get these items, but we hope you'll do it. And it's a free dream journal, an activity pack, and keepsake letters for your kiddos to kind of spur on some conversations around this topic. Okay, let's jump into today's show. Over the years, Laura, I know you and I have talked a lot about the difference between didactic teaching, which is, I think, a word I first heard from you, which is just kind of spelling out what you want the learner to know, and teaching kids or others in a way that's more what some people would call show, don't tell. It's more implicit and interpretive, and it gives someone an example or a story or a picture, and then it kind of leaves them to ponder and glean the message. And what I think is cool is that in scripture, we see, you know, God teach us in both types of ways. There are some areas of scripture that are just super clear where he just spells it out and there's really no other way to look at it. It's kind of here's step one, step two, here's my commands. And then there's also lots and lots of ways and stories where Jesus teaches us or God teaches us through a passage in a way that is more show, don't tell. It is a little bit more something that you need the Spirit to help you understand and interpret, whether that's in narrative or poetry or wise sayings or parables. And this is definitely something that originated with God. And what I love is, and we're going to dive into this today more, is that when you set out to write A World Wonder, I know that this was on your heart to not only create a resource that taught kids something in a way that was super, you should do this and you should be like this and this is what will make you happy. And but it tells them a story and then it allows them to leave with an impression. So we're going to be kind of diving into that today. But before we get started, would you tell us briefly about A World Wonder and why you wrote it?
You bet. Yes. I love talking about A World Wonder. You know, this book really originated as a little bit of a biography of my own life. Cora is the main character, and she is a lot like me. She has big dreams, big aspirations. And in the story, Cora grows up to become this world famous architect. And yet while she was a little girl, she kept talking about how she's going to make the world bigger and better. And there's this house at the top of the hill that Cora really loves. And she thinks of all the incredible things she'll do with it. But as she grows up, she becomes this architect. And as an architect, she designs things that people say over and over again, oh, that's a world wonder. That's incredible. And these buildings are huge blessings for people. And yet Cora doesn't ever feel totally satisfied. And so she moves back home to where that house was that she saw at the top of the hill. And this is her hometown. And she realizes the house is for sale. And so she ends up buying the house because it's like, whoa, this is my dream. This is everything I've ever wanted. And yet she doesn't know what to do with it because it's her biggest dream. And so she feels a little paralyzed. So she ends up just fixing up the house. And as she is staying in her home, she starts to meet the people of the town. And slowly over time, they really teach Cora what a true world wonder is, what the real meaning and where we get satisfaction in life is. And that's not through our achievements or going bigger and better, but about building community, of giving generously of our time and our talents and loving others along the way. So yeah, this book was really somewhat of the things that I have had to learn. And I also just thought, you know, kids, I love raising big dreaming kids. I love that. I think all parents are like, I want a child that dreams big and believes the sky is the limit and has a vivid imagination. And yet I kept thinking, well, how do we teach children to also be content in the midst of that? Because there's a danger with dreams, right? That where we suddenly are not content in the life God has given us, or we recognize that actually the limit is a little bit lower than the sky and that we're going to hit it. And so I think teaching children at a really young age where the true value and meaning and satisfaction in life comes from can allow them to continue to dream big and have a great imagination, but at the same time understand like what is really going to ultimately make them happy in life.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. And I think to loop back around to what I was mentioning at the beginning, it's so interesting that you chose to go this route, this storytelling route. And so I'm just curious, like, what's your why for telling this in a story? I know that you wrote a beautiful prayer book that tons of people have probably already purchased and loved. And that one is also written in a way that like kids can really engage in, but it is a little bit more straightforward in terms of teaching about prayer. So what do you feel like are the pros of sharing kind of a life lesson or an aspect of contentment through storytelling versus just spelling it out for kids? Like to write a story that's something like, be a dreamer, dream big, but don't forget to be content where you're at. You know, what's kind of the pros of that?
Yeah, well, I think you proved my point right there. It's not super engaging, but no, I know exactly what you mean. And you're right. I have written a more didactic book. There is nothing wrong with having a library that is full of great books that teach the truths of God in a very straightforward way. And we should have those books. I've written those books. I enjoy those books. I buy those books. But yeah, what I wanted to do here was something that, you know, when I was a little girl, I remember my mom had this book called The Book of Virtues. It's a big honking book. I'm sure you have it now. I think all my siblings, we all have the book now. And it's just short little stories. I mean, even like the Declaration of Independence is in there. There's like Greek myths. There's any kind of classic virtue story that you can think of is in this book, The Tortoise and the Hare, things like that. But my mom would read that to us periodically. And there are so many stories in there that I would remember as I've grown up. Like there's this one story about a little boy who gets this magic ball of yarn and he ends
up— That's one of my favorites.
It is one of my favorites too. I think of it all the time. So for anyone who hasn't read it yet, I should know the name. I'm not sure the name of the story.
Like the golden thread or something. I don't know.
Go ahead. Well, basically the idea is that if he is ever bored or wants to pass the time because the time's moving too slow or too painful or too hard, he can pull this piece of yarn that's on a ball and, you know, he'll wake up and now it's the next day or the next week or the next month. And so he starts with moving it maybe an hour or a minute, and then suddenly it's a week. And then suddenly it's all of his, you know, growing up years and he's an adult now. And then he misses his child's years. And it just shows like how much of life he's missed. And so often I wish away the time. And that's the virtue, right? Is to not wish away the time because you want to experience things and it shapes who you become and you understand why you do what you do and how you made the choices you did. And if you wish away that time, you lose so much of that. And that story comes back to me a lot when I find myself wishing away my life and thinking, I don't want to endure this. This is too hard. I wish I just had a magic ball of yarn. And yet we know at the end of that book, it turns out that that's not a good thing. He regrets having passed so much of his life. So that story, among many others, have really stayed with me through adulthood. And so that's something that I really wanted to do for children. And I'm sure I have not accomplished it the way the greats have in the Book of Virtues, but one of my desires is to be able to share truth with children. I think this is kind of a lost art in our modern age, through storytelling, and help them have vivid pictures and imagination around a virtue. And these types of books tend to be a little bit more inspiring, I would say. You know, my book on prayer is a great book. I don't know that it's like so inspiring for like how incredible, like the great things that prayer can do. There are other books out there that probably do that. It's a nice how-to for how to pray. This book, my hope was that it would inspire someone to say, oh, yeah, I want to use my gifts to serve and love others. Oh, I want to do great things for God, but I also want to like love my family along the way and keep those in balance and check. And so that is one of the reasons why I wanted to engage in this type of writing, because I feel like these types of books really stick with you for a long time. And it doesn't just teach you the logic of it. It really inspires you towards wanting more of it.
Mm-hmm. So on the flip side of that, do you feel like there are any drawbacks to this type of storytelling? Like what are the limitations or challenges?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, nothing's perfect. And I think the biggest challenge or, you know, potential risk that you're taking is that a child won't understand what you're trying to say, or they'll take away a meaning that you don't intend. And, you know, hopefully it's still a good meaning. And in general, if it's a well-written story, you're not going to get something that's super erroneous or terrifying, but it's certainly something that you risk. I know I read A World Wonder. I had a lot of kids read it as pre-early readers. And, you know, in general, they were humming around the same topic, but each of them had a little bit of a different angle. And to be honest, for me personally, I feel really comfortable in that. But I think some people maybe feel less comfortable having different meanings or someone to be able to take an interpretation on it. And then, of course, there's always the risk that the child won't love it. These types of stories are meant to capture the imagination. They're meant to be, in a way, even entertaining, you know? And I think there's an element as an author that you always risk just a child being like, meh, and then just moving on and it makes no impact.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. So I guess even thinking about virtues and specifically, you know, I also note in those didactic books, sometimes it can feel like do this, but don't do that. And when it comes to kids, why do you think they are so drawn to story as a way of learning and observing?
Yeah, well, I think that children love, they're just naturally curious. Right? They love to put themselves in other people's shoes and start to ask, well, why would they do this? And why did they do that? Or what would they do if this? What if? Which is a great childhood characteristic that I think we can model even more as adults too. And so I think that there's something about this that kids love because they can really picture themselves in the book. It's Charlotte Mason calls it like a living book. So that'll probably a lot of women who are listening will be familiar with that term. But there's something that I think the child can start to picture themselves in that character's shoes, and they can start to understand or relate to the choices that they made. And it also makes them primed and ready to somewhat learn from a character's decisions. What I love about these kind of books for kids is that it moves them beyond the logic of something. And so if you have a straightforward didactic book, and again, I think there are places for those books, but it tends to be like, this is what you should do, and here is how to do it. And there can be some inspiring element to it, but it doesn't feel nearly as inspiring as when we start to say, okay, look at this in action. And suddenly we don't just know what love is. We see love. We feel love. We start to sort of like our literal bodies, our hearts are pulled into starting to feel like, oh, I care about that character, you know? And I think there's something really powerful when you can tap into a reader's emotion and allow them to start to experience what you're trying to teach them, that takes that book a little bit further on. So we don't just have them like knowing what to do. We have them wanting to do what you should do.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And we're going to talk just in a little bit here about how that can impact us as moms when we read a story. But I wanted to loop back around to Cora in specific, who is the main character of A World Wonder. And you've already told us that she is a little bit of a biographical representation of you and some lessons that you've learned through your life. But would you share a little bit more with us about like how you have learned this virtue of just being content where you're at, maybe through motherhood specifically, in these last, you know, 10 years or so? Mm-hmm.
In the book, Cora is really learning about what really matters in life. And it's not an explicitly Christian book. And so we all know that what matters most in life is that we know and love God and we follow him. And yet the book is kind of pointing towards that in a natural way of recognizing that life isn't about our achievements, our accomplishments, our resume and accolades, but it's about the people we love along the way. And I think for me, you know, I'm a big dreamer. I'm constantly thinking about the next big thing. I love business ideas and entrepreneurship, and I like accomplishment. I mean, like at the kind of grossest sense of the word, you know, productivity and things like that. And yet, I think something that we talk a lot about at Risen Motherhood, and I think a lot about in my life as a mom, is we don't know what is really going to make an impact in our lives. And that it could be that what you and I are doing here at Risen Motherhood and doing these podcasting and talking about the gospel of motherhood is of huge value in the kingdom. And I believe at some level it really is. But I would never dare to say that it is more valuable than the work that I do quietly in the home where no one sees it, just me and my kids. And I think that there is a kingdom economy that doesn't make sense in our world that we need to be reminded of consistently. And I think I had to learn that my time with my children is just as if not perhaps even more impactful and more powerful or for what I will do for the kingdom than some of these bigger, flashier outward achievements. And so that's something that I think I wanted to acknowledge in the book was that Cora's accomplishments as an architect were still valuable. It's pretty awesome what she did. And I don't think we should feel bad about that, right? Or it doesn't mean those things are worthless or meaningless, but it means that what probably brought them ultimate value was whenever she had people she loved to share them with and where she was able to say, oh, I'm using my gifts in a way that's serving others. And to see that this relationship is just as valuable, actually more so, than this other thing that I created. And so placing proper value with things. And that's what I really wanted to portray in the book was to not dampen dreams. But sometimes I think dreams can be elevated so much that they're more important than people. And I wanted to be able to show, flip that upside down, I think, a little in the book.
Yeah. Well, you definitely accomplished that. And I'm excited for readers and, you know, moms, children, families alike to enjoy that story together. And it's interesting because as you and I talked about this book and this idea came about, I know you mentioned to me over and over again your desire to be in spaces where this could be common grace to families and kids that maybe aren't believers because, as you mentioned, it doesn't explicitly mention the gospel, it doesn't explicitly mention God or anything like that. So maybe dive into that a little bit more because I think that's not very common right now in the Christian space. You know, it's like there's really overtly Christian books and then you go to the public library and there's a whole bunch of like really overtly non-Christian books that like aren't just secular, but they have their own whole agenda. Like, I feel like people who are not following God have no problem like writing their worldview into books and putting them on our bookshelves. And yet, you know, we don't really see that on the flip side. So tell me a little bit about what your vision is for this book.
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, I don't see a lot of Christian authors doing this. And I felt like it was kind of risky when I first wrote the manuscript and I can't remember the moment, but I'm sure you were the first person that I told about it. And, you know, I kind of probably felt very hesitant of like, oh, but just so everybody knows, or just so you know, it's not Christian explicitly. And yet I do think I would like to see more Christian authors sort of pivoting back and forth. I mean, I think it used to be a lot more common 30, 40, 50 years ago where you did have Christians in both spaces kind of pivoting back and forth. But yeah, we've definitely become a little bit more siloed with things. And because I thought about something like the Book of Virtues having such an impact on me as a kid who was grew up as a Christian kid, grew up as a believer with believing parents. And yet God used a story that doesn't have a mention of him to help teach me something that he cares about, of living and enjoying your life and not wasting it, not frittering it away. And so I thought I would love to be able to do that for kids. And I would love to be able to just be a part of that and be in spaces where my book could be read in school. That was something that my other two books, in some spaces, they've not been allowed into. In fact, I've had one of the books be banned in a certain library, which is a wild and fun experience, kind of. But I think that there's an element that I wanted to write something that I could read in my kids' schools, that I could read at the public library, and to just be like, kind of like you said, like a gift of common grace to these people and to be a blessing. And then hopefully, if they like one book, they come and check out my backlist and they discover the things of God. And that would be my hope, is that someone would enjoy an author and their work and see the light of God kind of shining through between the words, you know? And I think that's something C.S. Lewis, of course, everyone would mention him, but he does so well with the Chronicles of Narnia. It's known, whether you're a Christian or not, you know what the Chronicles of Narnia are. Even some of the most atheistic God haters out there know the Chronicles of Narnia and love it. They love those books, even if they won't acknowledge God in them. And again, not putting myself at his level, far, far, far cry from it, but that idea still remains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so cool. And I am excited to see what God does with it. And I know you've even mentioned, you know, your backlist of other books and hoping that if someone loves this, they're going to run across who you are and look into that more and more. And it's just exciting to think about believers writing stories that all different types of people yeah. can relate to and coming away from that story with this sense of like, there's something different here. And this is leaving me encouraged and uplifted in a way that's different from other books that I've read. And I can't quite put my finger on mm-hmm. it. And then being able to hopefully discover that that's because there is an element of like godliness and true goodness yeah. in it that maybe they're not reading in other books. So,
and that's something that, you know, I talk a lot about whenever I talk with other people about writing children's books is that we have the privilege of echoing the greater story and that we do hold to a higher truth. So this isn't my truth. This isn't what I think is right. This isn't the popular things that are right in culture today that I'm kind of gliding along with, but instead there's a sobriety as a children's author or any type of person who handles creative work or words that I bring to it because I'm not writing just what I want to write. I'm writing underneath and pointing towards that greater truth. And I think, like you said, that my hope is that someone will kind of do the sniff check on it and be like, that is different because it's really ultimately not the truth that I've decided, that Laura Wiffler thinks is best. It's the truth that God has decided. And that's some great guardrails and a privilege to get to walk into as a Christian kids author.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So switching gears a little bit back to stories and reading them with our kids, I think, I know you've probably had this experience too, but I'm always amazed when I read a children's story to my kids and I am more impacted by it than they are.
I know.
I remember reading, I think it's called The Sower and why can't I think
yes,
of the
author? Sorry.
Is it Scott James?
Yes.
Is that, and you know, I want to say for sure, like this is a great book for kids. It is written for kids. It's beautiful. But like I read it and I was choking up.
You told me about this.
And I think my kids were like, okay, you know, And I almost felt like this is a book for me. Mm. And it looks like a kid's book, but it's a book that's touching my heart too. There's this story I read with my kids one year in the fall, and it's called Too Many Pumpkins. And it's about this old lady and this big pumpkin like falls off a truck and it like smashes in her yard and she's kind of disgruntled and frustrated about it. And so she's scooping, you know, the pumpkin away and it's kind of like rotting and stuff. And she forgets about it. And then the next year, all of those seeds end up becoming this like abundant garden, like overflowing with pumpkins, right? She has too many pumpkins and she's kind of sick of pumpkins. And then she starts using them to make different things. And she's making pie and she's making breads and she's like giving them all away to people. And in the end, like all of these pumpkins, this thing that happened to her that was like so frustrating that she didn't want ended up becoming this huge blessing in her life in a way that she was like overflowing blessing to others. And I'm probably way reading meaning into it that the author didn't even intend, but like
the author probably loves that you're doing this right now.
I was like, this story is like such a picture of what happens to us in life. And like a hard circumstance drops into our lap and like, we don't want it, but then it's growing fruit. And I'm like trying to explain all this to my kids. And they're like, yeah, what's the next story, Mom? You know? And I'm so like, remember that book, you guys, about the pumpkins? And they don't remember it. Yeah. So I think it just goes to show something as simple as like a picture book that we stumble across can leave such an impact and can kind of like speak to us figuratively where we're at and can show us a lesson. So I'm just curious for you, what virtue stories have really impacted you throughout your life and like what characters and stories have encouraged you to walk by the Spirit?
Oh man. Yeah. This is hard to even boil down. I mean, of course, as I mentioned, the Book of Virtues, I just highly recommend it. I can't probably overstate that enough. They even have a kid's version that's illustrated, with a few less stories. Not every single one is perfect in there, but in general, it's a great one. One of the ones that always sticks out to me is one that you recommended to me with the Quiltmaker's Gift.
Oh, that's a good one.
By Jeff Rambo, I think. Aunt Rambo, maybe. But that book is so good.
Oh, it's so good. So good. And I've made the mistake of starting that book before bedtime, and it's a long book.
It's a long book. I brought it to read aloud at school, and like some of the kids were like looking away, and I'm like,
because there's like a 30-minute read.
Oh, it's a long read. But it is so good. And actually, I've caught my kids reading it on their own a lot. So maybe it's like a little bit better for older kids, even though it's a total picture book. And the illustrations are so detailed and elaborate, and there's so much going on. I mean, you could study those illustrations for days. But I won't even go into why, because I feel like I have too many to list. But go get that. Buy that book. It is worth a purchase. It is such a beautiful book about generosity. And again, what matters in life. Miss Rumphius is one that I read as a little girl. Always loved the illustrations in. That's about making life beautiful. The Giving Tree. I know people are kind of like torn up on this book, like both directions. It is a sad book. But there's pictures of motherhood in The Giving Tree, you know, that it's just like give and you give and you give. And anyway, that one always stuck with me. The Winnie the Pooh series, I rediscovered those as a young mom. A.A. Milne didn't, I don't even know if I realized they were books. I always probably just thought they were a cartoon, but they are funny and clever, just very high quality literature. And there's so many great virtues displayed. And a more recent one, for an example, is Extra Yarn by Mark Barnett. This is kind of a newer book. Last 5 years or so. I could be wrong on pub date, but that's a great book just about another kind of contentment book. And there's a greedy old king in there that steals the box of yarn. And so it's great. And then of course, like we have the older books, you know, so beyond picture books, I think a lot of those middle school novels can do a lot of great works. I mean, we've mentioned it, but The Chronicles of Narnia, Anne of Green Gables. I know Anne, I wanted to be Anne as I grew up. She was just so spunky and fiery and the best friend anyone could ever imagine. And I grew up reading her a lot. Laura Ingalls Wilder, she shares my namesake. So of course I liked her. But a lot of these characters are stories that I know are sort of go-tos, but they're go-tos for a reason because they're very rich stories that really capture a kid's imagination. And they show through example just what a life well-lived looks like. So there's a handful, a quick list for y'all.
Yeah, well, we could spend a whole episode talking about good books.
My favorite book.
I guess just to help break it down for us, like a didactic for a minute, maybe describe like why do you think or how do you think it is that children's books can impact the moms who read them so much? And why does that make it worth it, like all the more so to choose books with truth and beauty?
Yeah, you know, I often think of parents as my secondary audience as I'm writing. Of course, as a children's book author, you're writing to children. But I know the power of a kid's book, of what it can do for an adult. And so I often am also thinking about that person who's going to read it aloud and the impact it can make. And I think there's something about reading these very simple books from a perspective of a life that you've lived, right? Like you're not an 8-year-old. You have experience.
It's like the Velveteen Rabbit.
Yes. Ooh, that's another great one that should be on the list. You've experienced grief and pain and selfishness, and you've probably been the villain at some points. You've been the hero. Like, you know what it means. You know the cost. And so I think as we read those, it's a different perspective that we can read them as an adult, because just like you were saying, the author probably didn't intend all this. Well, actually, the author probably did. You know, didn't maybe expect the children to fully get that. But like, that is a great book at work, is when a mom can start to say, wow, look at all these parallels to my life. And that's the hope, is that we grow into the stories that these authors are writing. That, you know, for any author who really cares about the literature they're writing, we want those stories to grow with the kids. I always think of Lucy's comment to Aslan. She says, Aslan appears and she says, Aslan, you're bigger. And he says to her, no, every year you grow, you will find me bigger. And it just, we never outgrow God, right? That's kind of the symbolism there. And I think the best stories, we never outgrow those stories. They are ones that stick with us and that we want to be reminded of again and again, because ultimately they're all pointing us to the greater story that God's writing. And they're just echoes of the greatest author. So I think it's worth working hard as a mom to choose books that exhibit truth and beauty because that's the kind of stuff that we want to point our kids to. We want to expose them to the best of the best in order to develop a palate. And, you know, it's funny because the other day we showed our kids a movie and it wasn't a bad movie or anything. We turned it on, it's a whole family, but our kids were looking away a bunch because it was a little bit scary. It was on like the edge of their scary threshold. And it's just, it started to become to where we were like, okay, look away, you know, just because it was just like a little too much for them. And I said to my husband, I'm like, hold on, turn this thing off. We do not want to teach our children to look away every time they're a little bit scared. Like that's an okay movie to watch. Just as long as you look away from the bad parts or the scary parts, like you can still engage in that. And I was like, they need to just be old enough to watch this movie without looking away because they can handle whatever this is. Otherwise, we're like developing a palette for them that someday it's going to be, you know, stuff that like movies that mm-hmm. I remember, you know, watching a scary movie as a kid, like an older kid, that I shouldn't be watching at all, right? But you're like, I'll just look away when it's scary. I'll just plug my ears, la, 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 la. And I think there's an element that we start to train our palates. We train them from a very young age of like, what's allowed and what's not allowed? How do we engage with media? How do we engage with books? And so we have a unique opportunity as parents to young kids to start developing a great high quality sense of what makes good literature. And that then trains them of what they're going to go off in the future and want to read and engage in. And so I think we have like just a prime opportunity to do that now. And there's no shortage of great books. That's the great news, is that there's a lot to choose from.
Awesome. Well, definitely A World Wonder is one of those. So before we head out, tell us where can we find it and remind us when it releases.
Yes. March 5th. So I think that'll be like next week from the release of this episode. And that'll be anywhere books are sold. So you can grab it, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target.com, all the places. And you can go to laurawiffler.com/A World Wonder if you want to learn more.
All right. Thanks, friend.
My name is Brittany Madden, and I'm part of the Risen Motherhood community because I'm reminded constantly of the kingdom value of everything I do in my motherhood. When I get lost in the everyday, continuous challenges of motherhood, Risen Motherhood recenters me on my why with my focus on my Savior. It's reference material that I could come back to when I need it. It's encouragement that I can share with a friend. This is my motherhood community. I am so thankful for this community and these resources.
Risen Motherhood is a nonprofit organization made possible by our generous donors for women just like you. If you'd like to support the ministry, please go to risenmotherhood.com/give.